From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of October, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com. He's in Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull will join us to discuss the weather for this month of October, what's left of it, how that might change as we go into November, and what producers in the United States should be thinking about. And then he'll also take up South America and how producers there might be concerned about La Nina and whether or not there's an El Nino that we might transition to as well. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. One other note, if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll be able to hear our Commodity Week program. This week, our panelists included Merrill Crowley, Kurt Kimmel, and Wayne Nelson. It's also up online right now at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn on this Friday settled at $5.25¾ a bushel, up 9 cents. The March up 8½ at $5.34¼. And May corn, $5.38¾, 7¾ higher. November soybeans, $12.17¾, up 11½ cents. January, $12.26¼. 10¾ higher in the March at $12.35¼, up 11 for the day. Bean meal, $2.50 higher at $316.60. And the bean oil at $61.29, 85 cents higher on the afternoon. Soft red winter wheat up 9¼ cents, settled $7.34 in the December. The hard red December at $7.43¾, 12¾ of a cent higher. And the oats in the nearby December contract at $6.60¼, up 25 cents. On the afternoon, live cattle futures in Chicago finished at $130.97½, up 67½ cents. Feeder cattle for 100 pounds down 82½ cents on the day at $161.52½, and lean hogs in the December contract at $78.27½, up 95 cents for the afternoon. Crude oil $82.28 a barrel, 97 cents higher, and the wholesale price of gasoline up about 4 cents a gallon at $2.42¾ per gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 35,182 is up 398 points for the day. Mike Zuzula, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day and the week. Actually finished better than the week. Traded out. Tell me about it, please.
Well, it was a nice way to close. And, you know, as we finished the week up, I was wondering what the wheat would do because it did get the best report from a supply-demand standpoint, Todd, and I think caught the market off guard to the long side as far as the upward bias in prices. But we didn't see that until we finally got to the end of the week. And it's interesting, soft red wheat able to close only about a half a penny down before settlements, I would suspect. Spring wheat and hard red wheat, we're going to be able to close higher at this stage. And I think that is indicative of the report. And one of the nicest things to have happen, other than the really strong export sales pretty much across the board on Friday morning, which were delayed because of the Columbus Day holiday, we did see rumors that China was buying both European wheat and potentially our wheat as well. So good way to shore up the markets going into the weekly close. Still got a lot of ground to make up in the soybeans, but looks like Dease corn's only going to close about 3 cents off its close from last Friday as well. So it's hanging in there pretty nicely.
Now, under the category, and I know we talked about this yesterday, but it was in the opposite direction of oats nose. They had a really good day today.
It is. It's one of those things where the oats market and some of the other softs commodities, whether it's cotton or cocoa or coffee, they really do have an explosive nature about them because of the tight supplies. I think the other thing just boils down to very thin volume traded. And so that still by not to to take away from the rally and the several digit point highs that we saw in the Dease oats on Friday, it really does capture the market's attention and takes the pressure off the negative supply that you know, USDA gave us, especially for the soybeans.
Well, tell me about that supply and demand table, how you view it going forward.
I can't argue with USDA's numbers as far as the yield goes or the demand side goes. And so for the soy complex, I think it was a very clean report. It was really interesting to me, Todd, that we went from the tightest stocks to use ratios for the world in soybeans in September, in 1 month later, in 3 years, 1 month later, we went to this week to the highest level of stocks to use ratios for world soybeans. And I think that's, you know, really kind of at this point, that report recalibrated the trade sentiment and essentially is telling us, look, the U.S. supply led market and the rally led by the soy complex, other than the soybean oil and what's happening over in Malaysia and Indonesia, you better focus on South America at this point if you want a soybean weather-led rally. And I think that's what we see going forward, with Argentina really being talked about quite a bit this week.
Is that why the market was up today in the soybeans, just on the idea that Argentina is going to be dry?
I think in part, but I also think that the demand side came back. You know, as I said, with the weekly export sales, soybeans were up 9% versus the 4 week average on sales for the week. We had several purchases daily in the morning from China. It seems as though the trade buys into the idea that, look, that dollar plus break in beans has brought back the demand, and we found our sweet spot because we're $20 to $40 cheaper than Brazil and Argentina at the Gulf of Mexico now. And what I really liked most about the weekly export sales as we saw them today was, we had physical exports of over 1.7 million tons of soybeans, and that was up 82% from last week. So we've got our Gulf shipping back after Hurricane Ida.
What do you see in the corn market?
I think the corn has very tight supply-demand factors. And one thing I'll be watching next week, Todd, other than Argentina, because Argentina is the number two corn exporter typically in the world, I think I'll be watching to see if this stocks number that USDA gave us of a 1.5 carryover is a little bit misleading, in that we had Hurricane Ida mess around with the grain stocks report. And so I'm wondering whether the middle part of the country's basis levels won't start to pop up pretty nicely next week, especially if we continue on a wetter, cooler path here in the States.
Is that easier for corn to do rather than soybeans?
I think much so, because it is just burdensome to have a 300 plus million bushel carryover and 104 plus million metric ton soybean carryover. I just don't see the end users getting nervous about locking in extra supplies, which I think that is possible in some of the feed grains, especially if they start to really worry about inflation and prices going higher several months down the road. But that, we're not there yet, I don't think.
So soybeans really suffered from Ida and the shutdown of the port in New Orleans, largely because it doesn't, at least the trade, I guess, doesn't believe, or USDA, either one, believe that those exports will be absorbed in a shorter amount of time. Usually that is open through January or thereabouts, and then logistically they turn to corn in the United States and begin to export soybeans out of Brazil. That's a problem. That's been a big problem for soybeans. But on the flip side, did that demand just disappear, or was it the dollar that we had above the current marketplace that made it go away too?
Yeah, I think there's less competition in the wheat and corn, and I think the soybeans are going to have a hard time getting that demand back. Once it's lost for good. And I think part of that goes back to the livestock sector too. I will say also, Todd, you bring up a big point about China individually. I'm kind of taking what their weather pattern was this past fall and summer at face value, i.e. they had some really tough weather in the eastern parts and the northeastern parts. Western parts and northwestern parts of China. And it's an issue that I think that really is going to clip the wheat and the rice production, and maybe to a lesser degree the corn, whereas the soybeans look like they're going to stand up pretty well because they don't plant as much of those anyway.
So wet weather in the harvest season there, or planting season, depending on which crop you're worried about.
Yeah, and as I said, I made the mistake twice, the east and the northeast sections, but especially the east of Hebei and Henan.
What are you telling producers about the crop that they're bringing in now and the things that they should consider? And what mostly are they asking about? I suspect it's about what should I sell or store, especially for those bushels that have to go to the elevator.
Yeah, extra bushels is what I'm hearing more of, which is nice to hear. And I choose the soybeans to sell off the combine faster than the corn. I think the storable bushels are better in the corn from a standpoint of futures and basis. I did say, though, last night that if we closed above 1205 in November beans and regained some weekly chart support, I think it would be a good idea just to hold pat and see if you couldn't spread this out a couple days and see if you couldn't get a couple days of good price action and resume next week in the middle of the week on off the combine sales for soybeans.
If you're an end user in need of corn and bean meal, what do you do?
I think bean meal is making a low. I didn't like the NOPA crush market numbers today, well below what we expected in the exports of meal, down about 30% versus August. But I still like the way the charts look and the way that the oil has been bought against the meal. So buy your meal at this point for Q4, and I would say get about 50% of your corn bought here in the next couple, 3 weeks for Q4 and maybe even part of first quarter of 2022.
Anything else on the macro side that we need to discuss, whether that's the Chinese economy, coal, crude oil, other types of energies?
You know, everything you just described really does go back to the Chinese economy. So it's still a red hot issue. And I'd say just keep watching and stay focused on the dollar, how it reacts with the Chinese currency and how it reacts with the Brazilian currency. I think it'll tell us a lot here in the coming weeks.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great week.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, happy Friday to you, Eric.
Yeah, it is Friday, right? Finally.
yes. You know what? It's been a busy... It's odd because usually during harvest, it's not terrible for me. However, it's been busy. And I think it's just the weather forecasts and all kinds of other things have been really running along at a unique rate. And farmers have had it's not been a bad time, but it's been hit or miss. Can you tell me about the month so far in October?
Yeah, well, I think we all are kind of maybe dreaming a little bit about what we had last year. Even though it was cold, it was dry, and we got things out of the field pretty quickly. This year has been the opposite. I mean, if you look at our climate reporting district, which basically runs from just a bit south of Champaign up to Kankakee, that's our climate district. We've had the ninth wettest start to October, so the front half of October, ninth wettest in 130 years. So we've been chased out by these big rainfall events and these just persistent, gloomy, higher moisture days. And it's unfortunate because I look back at my forecast back in September for October and I said, hey, it looks like we could have a pattern that doesn't give us the just wide open harvest windows. But I don't think I actually said, I don't think it's going to be overly wet. And the reason why I said that was our worst harvests are when we get this dreaded stationary front that will just sit over Illinois and Iowa and just not stop raining. That didn't happen this year, but boy, we've had a lot of systems coming out of the west. And while this current one going through today is going to, you know, still give us this kind of gloomy, rainy day today. In fact, it's going to be producing some severe weather in the Ohio River Valley. It will move out and we will clear out and dry out, although it's going to be cool. We're going to finally get into some cool fall air as we approach the weekend and then get into early next week. But the only thing in the near term I'm concerned about, when I say near term, I'm talking next 7 days, is on Tuesday, I'm going to watch a low come out of Wyoming. It's going to go to Wisconsin. And as it does that, we'll be to the south of it. The cold front will come through us and give us another chance of showers midweek next week. But not a lot of rain. We're not talking about much next week.
Have you thought about the big picture and what's happening with the pattern and cold temperatures? We usually think about those about this time of year, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's October 15th, right? So our climatological first average frost would be on Sunday. That would be the 17th. That would be the day. And while we're going to cool down here in the near term, the really cold air, and this is the answer to your question about the pattern, it's in the Gulf of Alaska. And I actually wrote an article this morning. I said the Gulf of Alaska keeps reloading. And what I mean by that is just keeps dipping these deep troughs into the west. Now, if they stayed there, we would absolutely love it because it would be one of those dry harvests. But instead, the troughs keep coming out over the mountains, especially as we get into the third and fourth week of October. And then they cut into, you know, the plains and kick off low pressure systems. So while we're going to buy some time here in the next 7 days or so of some drier conditions, that's going to happen. We're going to go into an active time period. Now, if I was in California, I would be out, you know, just celebrating the fact that it's going to rain again. But the problem is that that same active pattern cuts through us as well. So are we going to see the first frost? I don't really see good indication of that happening. Will we get lows in the 30s? Sure, but not below 32, at least any time here in the near term. And so cooler, yes, but not cold. So that's what we got.
Sounds like farmers are going to need to boogie during the next week or so to get things caught up, I guess.
Yeah, I'd have everything ready to rock and roll the moment that you can get back into the fields and just get going, because I just get concerned that we get there to that, you know, past the 22nd, 23rd of the month, and I think it's going to just go back over to a pattern that gets us, you know, only 3 or 4 days between systems.
South America and La Nina.
Yeah, so that La Nina has got me concerned about the longer-term problems in South America, and primarily I'm talking southern Brazil. So that would be roughly Paraná down to Rio Grande do Sul. So we're talking about 25 to maybe 30% of the soybean crop area. Northern Brazil, eastern Brazil, monsoonal rains are going right now. The forecast is wetter than average through the next 10 days or so, which means planting progress is going to continue on its, you know, pace, which is faster than the five-year average and faster, certainly faster than last year. But my biggest concern with that La Nina is historically about 7 in 10 years. That's a pretty high ratio. We have drought problems in or around Argentina. So that includes Paraguay, Uruguay, and southern Brazil. So if the La Nina manifests itself as we're currently projecting, which is now stronger, okay, then it's going to be something to look out for. And I'll just put a bug in here about this as well. I think that La Nina is going to fade to El Nino by late next spring. And if that happens, the best analog I just found for that, and I'm going to say it, but I don't want anybody to hold me to it, okay? The best analog I just found for that was 2008 into 2009. And a lot of folks around here would remember 2009 as being a cooler summer with plenty of precipitation. Now, that's just one analog to all of this, but it's going to be the one that over the next few weeks I'm going to really analyze and put under the microscope to see if it fits the bill.
Hold it, 2009, is that the year that Iowa was just a swamp?
It was wet across the Corn Belt in summer, okay? But I don't think it was that year. I'll have to call some buddies in Iowa to ask, but I can go look up the precip stats too here in a little bit.
I don't recall exactly. I can't bring it up in my mind that fast. All right. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribulm. Hoped us to wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. FYI, I took a look back. I think maybe that what I was recalling was 2008. It could have been 2010 for all I know. I just remember that Iowa was inundated in one of those particular years. Of course, the Closing Market Report is something you can find online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org.